Soviet Union produced some of the world's finest physicists. Physics thrived in the Soviet Union in spite of communism and thrived because of it. When the Soviet Union fell, many scientists left for Israel, France, and the United States. A handful of the best went to the University of Minnesota. And while the climate there is similar to Siberia, the culture is not. NPR's David Kestenbaum has a report.
The Theoretical Physics Institute is silent in the mornings. Even the printer is still. The physicists, the Russians as everyone calls them, are somewhat nocturnal. Jenny Curtis, who helps run the office for them, gets in early, partly so she can clean up.
One of the more famous examples was a bag of bread that looked like some chipmunks or something had torn into it, and there was chunks of bread all over, and we do have squirrels in the building, so I wasn't sure whether it was the squirrels or the Russians.
When they do come in, the Russians sit around in front of a blackboard, thinking. Someone gets up, changes something, then all hell can break loose. This is physics Russian style. It's combative. Jenny Curtis got a taste for the spirit of things on her first days here. Two physicists danced a wild Russian ballet in the front of her desk.
And they were kind of holding on to each other like sumos and circling and yelling in Russian, and I didn't know what was going on.
It was just Arkady Weinstein greeting a friend. Weinstein tackles equations in his spacious American office with similar force.
Doing physics, it's fun. I mean, when you are, you know, on some way and you almost catch something and ideas are coming and going.
Weinstein has a helmet of frantic white hair. It's left over from his early days at the Physics Institute in Novosibirsk, Siberia, where physicists were just about the only ones around to cut hair, and so didn't very often. Weinstein writes one of the deepest truths known to man on the board, the central equation for quantum chromodynamics, the force that holds atomic nuclei together. This is the stuff they're fighting over. One American says the Russian style of physics goes like this. You approach a colleague with a bud of a new idea, and he immediately says, "That's idiotic." The ensuing argument can go on for hours. Ideally, no one leaves the room until the truth outs.
You see, it's like, you know, like a sport, right? Would you yell if your partner, you know, does something wrong?
Arguing can be a fast way to the truth. Russia has produced revolutions in thought. The idea of smashing two beams of particles together to explore the tiny realm of subatomic physics was born in Siberia. But at least one idea that later won someone a Nobel Prize reportedly got shouted down in Russia because it was deemed idiotic.
It's not that I'm trying to justify it, because I believe that there is a little bit too much in that, and in this way I believe that I kind of readjust myself to be more mild. but to yell and to be agitated about it, it's kind of normal state for me.
The institute where Weinstein worked was one of several legendary physics centers set up by the Soviet government. Physicists had produced the atomic bomb, so the government paid them to keep thinking, even if it wasn't always about weapons. While the economy tanked and harvests failed, physics bloomed, in part because of oppression. That's how Mikhail Shiffman did it. He came here 10 years ago. He's discussing how to tell if the universe contains extra hidden dimensions. Shiffman says physics was popular in the Soviet Union, in part because science was a kind of other dimension, a place where reason, not politics, reigned.
Doing physics was our refuge from the mad world which surrounded us, you know, because everything in this world, what you would normally call black would be called white, and vice versa. And of course, I mean, just in the practical sense, life was very, very, very not so easy, because just making ends meet was a tricky problem, you know.
The legal system was corrupt, government was corrupt, you couldn't start your own business. So people who might have done something else instead studied physics. Hundreds of intellectual refugees pooled at elite places like the Landau Institute near Moscow.
It was good, because if you meet needed to learn something new, you didn't have to go to the library and find a book and read the book. You just find the right person and ask the right question, and very quickly you have the right answer.
Inside the institutes, there was a certain freedom. Unlike in the U.S., there was little pressure to publish papers. Physicists could spend their lives working on impossible problems that sometimes turned out not to be. But if you did want to publish, well, then you ran into the strange logic of the Soviet world. Leonid Glazman, who looks a bit like a tall Bob Dylan, sits across the hall from Schiffman.
And you have to fill out a form telling that your paper contains nothing.
Every scientific paper had to be reviewed by the KGB.
And then this nothing was itemized. So basically, you certify that your paper contains nothing important scientifically, technically, nothing in engineering, and this list was going on and on forever. So, I mean, after filling out this page, you wonder why do you want to submit this paper altogether.
The indignities came in many forms. For Mikhail Schiffman, the small things added up. He had food and an apartment, but because he was Jewish and not a member of the Communist Party, he couldn't get his plumbing fixed. Eventually, the very system which had helped make physics great chased him out.
When I was young, okay, I would close my eyes and I say, okay, I'm young and I'm strong and I have my physics to do, and it's so rewarding and I like it very much, you know. So I somehow survived. But by the mid-80s, this accumulation of these factors led me to the idea that if I could leave the country, I would better do it.
The Russians say they have become Americanized since their arrival. They try not to use the word idiotic so much. They keep more regular hours, attend obligatory faculty meetings. Minneapolis has a few Russian restaurants, but they don't go there. Alexei Kaminsky, a 28-year-old graduate student from St. Petersburg, is more likely to go to McDonald's, which is where we have lunch. Alexei orders a drink and a chicken sandwich, but he doesn't get them. We get kicked out. The cashier says, "You can't record in McDonald's without permission." That reminds Alexei of the old Soviet days when police would sometimes take the film out of your camera. But it's also emblematic of modern Russia, he says. McDonald's is a business, fast money.
Actually, a lot of people I studied with, they went to business, and comparing yourself with these people, they are much wealthier than the people who stayed in physics, and sometimes it's very depressing.
Some physicists in Russia are determined to preserve the grand tradition. But Alexei sees the shift to capitalism and away from physics as inevitable.
Presently, I don't see the way how Russian physics can recover, but I don't know. It was not for me like something great was broken. The system was pretty ugly, and when it got broken, okay, let it be.
Every year or so, the Physics Institute at the University of Minnesota hosts a small but high-power conference. Physicist Charlie Marcus came this year. He points out his heroes, Igor Alener, who once solved a difficult equation by scribbling in the air with his finger, Anatoly Larkin, who at 67 has become a kind of oracle on the subject of superconductivity.
I'm from Harvard, and we still think of this little place in Minnesota as where somehow the Russian theoreticians have been seeded and have thrived. I think their current Americanization is an unbelievably powerful phenomenon in physics, because they're liberated intellectually. They're liberated from, you know, having to live in one-room apartments, and so they can maybe concentrate a little bit better. And the style of their research is changing to be more, I think, free-thinking.
The Russians don't all agree. Leonid Glazman, asked whether he has accomplished more by coming to the U.S., responded with an experiment. Set up two parallel universes, he said. In one, leave him in Russia. In the other, send him to Minnesota. Then, compare the results. David Kestenbaum, NPR News, Minneapolis.